Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Brandon, I have a tough question for you to start things out. Do you have anything to complain about?
Nothing that would be anything other than nitpicky.
Yeah.
I mean, by and large, and I think this has been the case for the last several weeks of Raw since Triple H took over, there are things on the show that I don't necessarily love, but I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with those things. It's just it might not be my particular cup of tea, but I can see why they're doing what they're doing. And in most instances, I think it's working. I think that this has been, you know, I said on Twitter a couple of weeks ago that the purported changes were supposed to be subtle. And I think by the casual fan's definition, you could call what they've done so far subtle. But for anybody who has been watching these shows week in and week out with a critical eye for many, many years, like a lot of us have, whether we, you know, cover the show or just watch as a fan, I think the changes have been very drastic in that regard. But that's sort of the best of both worlds for WWE, because you're pleasing the hardcore fan who is watching with a critical eye, and they seem to be overall enjoying these shows much more. And on the surface, it doesn't seem like things have changed enough for the casual fan to look at this and say, well, I don't recognize this. This is different than what Vince McMahon would put on TV. And I think that's the argument that a lot of us were making for so many years, is that they didn't have to make massive wholesale changes to the way that they promoted their product in order for it to get drastically better. Little things here and little things there, crossing T's, dotting I's, tying bows, would go such a long way. And I think that's what we're seeing now on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, it's an absence of irritations, absence of irritants. I mean, it's more subtract. Well, I shouldn't say it's more subtraction. I think there's a good number of things to point out that have been added to the product, but it does feel like it's pretty – the things that are making Raw and SmackDown immensely – and I'll say this, immensely better pro wrestling programs right now are simple things that have either been praised when they've been done in the past, on occasion, inconsistently by WWE and other companies, or were just – kind of like it seems like obvious things to do, you know, I mean, and it is, and I said last week, I'll do it briefly here, you know, there's a phrase, you know, death by a thousand cuts, and I think this is just an improvement by a thousand little things, you know, like I couldn't list a thousand, but I could list dozens, you know, maybe get to 24, you know, like little things and medium things that are being done, and it's a better show. Like, I mean, it's really it's just cool. Like, it's cool to be able to watch this many Raws and SmackDowns in a row and just feel like the institution that is WWE is in good hands. And barring us being way off and viewership dropping more than, you know, seems reasonable given, you know, competition and that kind of thing, it just seems like we're as wrestling fans, or, you know, in my job podcasting and writing about wrestling, it's going to be more fun. I mean, I it's fun for me to critique bad shows, don't get me wrong, but I'd much rather just get into discussing the show like I do Breaking Bad, you know, when I'm watching a great TV series or Succession. You know, like, let's just talk about the great characters and the great storylines and the great matches and the great exchanges and argue over who was better. That's way more fun than being irritated by, you know, 24/7 repetitive juvenile nonsense and scatological bathroom humor that's aimed at, you know, seventh grade. Well, it might only be found funny by seventh graders, or I should say 7 year olds. And wrestling being sort of diminished, like as sort of this backdrop that is just there for other things. Let's get in and get out. video packages that make wrestlers and titles and team events feel more important than they ever have. And on and on. You know what I mean? Like I said, I mean, we just list the I mean, we had references to Jimmy Smith said they're fighting into the stands. And there's still that little pause of, am I allowed to do this? I am. And he says it, and, you know, they're considering what we're to say instead of WWE Universe. And there are multiple opportunities to do that. You have sports entertainment being made fun of. It's almost ruined Chris Jericho's gimmick in AEW. You know, I mean, I think they kind of have to move on from you know, saying that they're pro WWE, pro sports entertainment, because that company that they created their that they built their faction around making fun of doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in a very, very short time, the people that have been clamoring for something different than Vince McMahon's vision for pro wrestling in this era have been proven right. And I think that, you know, like you said, barring some sort of drastic decline in ratings, I think that trend is going to continue, because there really is no reason for a drastic decline in ratings, because the product isn't different enough to me, this feels like a show that still has the imprint of Vince McMahon on it, because we're still working through Vince McMahon created storylines,
right,
and will be for quite some time. But the differences are just that they are being told through a different lens with a clean house. And it felt like for a long time, WWE was operating in a house that was filthy, that was dirty, that was just covered in these bad, what's the word I'm looking for? Like just bad habits. They had bad habits that had formed over time. They relied on specific finishes too frequently. They had gotten too cute with the language. All of these things that just add up and add up and add up, that Vince McMahon was so adamant about having part of the weekly show. And you strip all of that away, but you still keep the same backbone there. And suddenly you're able to look at the entire product with a fresh lens, with fresh eyes, but it's still at its core WWE. And so I think that it should, for all intents and purposes, be safe from a ratings perspective. And that means that there will be no reason to change this general formula going forward. And I think that that's a net positive for everyone, because it means looser scripting. It means, like you mentioned, a significant relaxation on the ridiculous buzzwords, and just feeling like everyone was, you know, sort of at like hand around throat to fit this mold that Vince McMahon had decided had to be his vision for pro wrestling. And yeah, I think, like you said, on the AEW side, the sports entertainment gimmick is almost irrelevant now. I mean, they're making fun of something that hardly exists. And I think AEW has to be cognizant of that. I think you've heard Tony Khan recently say that, hey, Raw and SmackDown are pretty good right now. So, I mean, they're certainly aware, and good shows on both sides makes everybody better. I mean, this is good for AEW. This is even better for WWE.
I totally agree. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves and then get on to more conversation, including phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 15th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, documenting the first draft of pro wrestling history. And those back issues are available for VIP members, over 1,700 of them if you go VIP. And I'm also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast and post shows, the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members. I co-host The Fix with Todd Martin and Everything with Rich Fan, along with pay-per-view, post-pay-per-view roundtables for our VIP members, and also oversee and contribute to the pwtorch.com website. The other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire, who contributes to that website, pwtorch.com, with Alt Perspective pay-per-view reports. His beat used to be covering SmackDown on a weekly basis, and he's a frequent co-host on the post shows. Brandon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. I mentioned on Twitter earlier today, this is my my first stint as co-host in the Triple H era, which is, of course, only a few weeks old, but so much has changed in such a short amount of time, as we've already kind of gotten into.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, let's keep rolling here. Let's give out the phone number and email. If you want to contribute to the show, our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. As I've noted in the last couple of weeks, I know we have some fresh listeners, some people who haven't listened in a while. I know I see on Twitter that Cato was interacting with someone who hadn't watched Raw in a long time and was commenting on how they were 2.5 hours in and counting. I want to hear from you guys. You know, if you're listening to us live here on the Raw Post Show, chime in. Give us a call and push 1 on your keypad. And we'd love to just get your feelings on what you're seeing that's different. And are you convinced yet? Or are there still some irritants? Or is it still too long? Or is there something missing that, you know, there's people in WWE who listen to this show. Like, is there something missing that would get you to watch every week and be more engaged? This is a forum to be heard and express yourself. And we invite you to call us, especially if you're not a regular viewer of Raw and SmackDown, or even if you're newer returning to this post show. I know a lot of you listen on delay and download the show, and that's great. That's what most of you do. But if it works out Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to join us live, you can stream. We have a link in my TV reports at pwtorch.com for Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. There's links at the top and bottom that'll take you right to a live stream of the show. We start 5 to 10 minutes after they go off the air. And you can also find that link on Twitter at pwtorch. And we tweet that out, that link out, with a few minutes left in the show or right after it ends. You can also always go to WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's WadeKellerPostShow.com. And just navigate to the live stream. You can also call and just listen on your phone. That might be easier for you. The number for that, again, is 347-215-8558. If you do that, we won't bring you onto the show unless you push 1. That's what flags you on our switchboard and indicates you want to be brought onto the show. The other way to reach us is via email, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so with all that taken care of, Brandon, let's go to our calls. We're going to go first to, it looks like, a Pennsylvania area code, 814. 814, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, how you doing? What did you think of Raw tonight?
Good. Pretty good show. I have a question on this Dexter Lumis storyline. You think
they're heading
in the direction of Trish Stratus and Mickie James? Something similar, maybe not exactly, you know, the same thing, but as far as like Dexter being like a huge fan of AJ Styles or trying to protect them and just getting a little bit carried away in his emotions.
Interesting. Brandon, what's crossed your mind and what do you think of Ryan's, I don't know if I'll say it's a theory as much as just a possibility he's considering.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting possibility. I'm not sure what to make of it quite yet. It's certainly an interesting hook. I was never big on the Dexter Lumis character in NXT. It didn't do much for me. I thought it was a little bit hokey, a little bit too over the top. I didn't mind some of the stuff toward the end there with the way, but he would not have been a guy on my radar as someone to bring back this early on. But I don't want to be too down on it because I do think that the rosters were kind of so thin that, you know, getting a fresh face in there is a welcome addition. And I think that what they've been doing these last 2 weeks has been a good way to generate buzz. I think the way that they've introduced him, the way that they have the announcers react to him showing up, has worked very well. Like you know that it's part of the show because it's Dexter Lumis. It's a recognizable character that we've seen on WWE TV before, but the announcers react in a way that makes you sort of second guess, like maybe this isn't part of the show. You know, it's done tastefully and well so that it doesn't feel over the top and too ridiculous and too unbelievable. So I really like the way it's been presented so far. And obviously they are setting something up with AJ Styles, since both of the times that Dexter has shown up thus far, he has, you know, been getting involved in an AJ Styles match. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to go the route of, you know, like suggested, him being obsessed with Styles or interested in protecting Styles, or if we're just going to jump right into sort of Styles and Dexter Lumis feud. I'm not really sure. I think we need a couple more weeks to see it play out. I assume in the coming weeks, he is going to get more involved. So we're going to see him actually get in the ring and do something, be that, you know, try to protect Styles or attack Styles.
Well, Brandon, what do you think is the best way to utilize Dexter Lumis? If you're not into the character, is there a way to take what that wrestler presents and what that character still is to some degree, obviously, a creepy guy with a disconcerting lack of facial expressions who doesn't exactly follow normal social rules? Okay, that's the baseline we're working with here. Sure. Is there something they can do to that would work for you, or is that character just not going to do it for you?
I don't know that I'm going to get into that character, and I mean, that's fine. I think that it can work in a certain scenario. It just may not be for me. I think that the closest they could come for me to enjoy what they present, you know, with Dexter Lumis is to have him sort of be the heavy for someone, maybe a heel that's smaller. But I don't know. See, I want to say WWE hasn't traditionally done very well with that in the last few years, but we are under a completely new regime. So maybe it is something that Triple H could pull off. I wouldn't mind seeing them try something like that. I don't want to see it with Styles, because I do think that AJ just kind of got out of that mode with Omos, and I would rather see Styles on his own and continue this babyface run. So if they're going to do it, I think it would have to be after they get done with whatever they have plan with Styles first.
All right, Ryan, what else have you got?
Hey, second question I have is on Judgment Day. Do you think what's going to happen with this Dominic Mysterio is he's going to become romantically involved with Rhea Ripley? Because it seems like Rhea Ripley is really obsessed with Dominic Mysterio, even though it's sort of like in a very physical, beating him up way.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I wouldn't rule anything out as far as that storyline goes, but I wouldn't have that real high on my list. If Dominic was playing along with getting beat up and wasn't really beat up, maybe then you could say, yeah, you know, he's smitten with Rhea Ripley with him, and that's been going on, and that's one of the reasons he left. But the storyline has been more the dynamic of Dominic kind of wanting to branch out on his own. He wants to be loyal to his dad, but there's things about – but he's kind of – we're watching a rebellious teenager-type storyline for a guy in his mid-20s. But that's fine for, you know, this type of two people in the career, to, you know, who are going to work together. It is a natural thing that happens in life where there's someone trying to – a son maybe trying to carve out an identity for himself and not wanting to just be seen as a son of his father, and maybe his father is showing some weakness. There's all kinds of movies that have been built around this. You can probably rattle off four or five of them, Brandon, you know, where that's been a plot line in a movie. But it almost sounds like the way they said they stomped out his soul, that they're going to go with the storyline that they really did beat him up, but that by beating him up, he became sort of he realized that they were – he'd only be safe if he joins them, and that he might show up with indications that his soul isn't there, or that at least he gives off that vibe. That seems more likely than a romance to me. The romance feels sort of like a random list, 50 things that could happen on a message board, and Ryan picked one of them. That's probably in the 40s for me, but maybe not. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the romance angle is something that has sort of taken life on Twitter in a comical way. I mean, even Rhea Ripley has played into it to some extent. I mean, like the idea that you know, Dominic shows up to work with a huge smile on his face because he gets to be dominated by Rhea Ripley. And Rhea has actually quote tweeted some of those herself just in a joking manner. So it seems like the characters are certainly in on it. I don't think that they're headed in that direction, but I do, Wade, like you said, think that they are more headed to like a Stockholm syndrome type scenario where Dominic is sort of almost beaten into submission, no pun intended there, but beaten into submission to join Judgment Day. In other words, he's not getting what he's looking for out of his father. Rey is sort of butting heads with him on a regular basis. Dominic wants to branch out on his own, and in order to do so, the best way he feels to get away from his father is to sort of turn his back on his father and join forces with the group that is trying to take his father out. I think that they've set themselves up where we have sort of an actual believable story to tell between Rey and Dominic in the sense of a wrestling, in the context of a wrestling show. I mean, people understand that, you know, Rey and Dominic are father and son, and for all intents and purposes, they have a great relationship as far as we can tell. But in a wrestling show, I think they've gotten themselves to a point where we can reasonably suspend disbelief and believe that Dominic would want to go join this group that's trying to put an end to his father's legacy so that his own legacy can begin.
And Ryan, you usually have a third topic for us. What do you think? What's up?
Third topic really doesn't have to do with Rob, but I plan to get an AEW, and I was just wondering how late you take calls on Wednesday, because I plan to stay for the whole show to get my Ticketmaster situation straightened out and everything goes as planned.
Yeah, so we're usually on the air past the point of Rampage tapings ending, so we should be still on the air. So, drop me an email and we can work it out, or just give us a call.
All right, I'll probably just give you a call because I can't guarantee that, I'll be able to make the call, but I'll do my best.
Yeah. Well, I'll look for you. Thanks, Ryan. I'm definitely interested in getting your perspective on that live experience if you are able to give us a call.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. Yep. You bet. Want to rotate in an email here and go to James B. in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. So I haven't watched WWE regularly in several years, but I've been checking in since Vince McMahon retired. I turned it on tonight right before the hype video for AJ Styles and Bobby Lashley. While this wasn't on the level of some classic video packages that many fans still talk about years later, it got me excited for a match that would have otherwise felt throwaway. There has been a lot of discussion about the need for and best use of video packages lately, and this one nailed its goal perfectly. How long was it? Like 60 seconds, maybe? More of this, please. AEW would be well-served to take note of this video and produce similar ones to promote matches and feuds. Great job, WWE production team. Brandon, I'm so on board with this. I feel like the Paul Levesque era is sort of the implementation of a lot of things that a lot of ideas or that I have had and expressed, and it's not that I came up with them, originally, but I have absolutely been in favor of video packages. And it's one thing to explain. It's another thing to just see it in action. And this email just encompasses this perfectly. It was a match that might seem like a throwaway match to a lot of people. It might, Vince McMahon, however many episodes of Raw and SmackDown there have been, he's promoted so many TV main events on his clock. It's hard for him to get excited about it and to get his team excited about it, or to even have it cross his mind that viewers out there might be more excited about it. And with a video package, that did it. It's like Paul Levesque sitting down with his team, and he comes up with the main event a week ahead of time. And he says, how can we create interest on this show for next week's match? Let's do an angle. Let's set it up. Let's have a promo. And let's announce it. Let's frame it in a certain way. And then how do we make it seem like a bigger deal by the time it takes place within the show that it's on? And there's multiple things you can do, but these video packages for the IC title on Friday, the US title a couple weeks back, those are great. Tonight's video I thought was great in a short span of time. And it's like precisely what I have been advocating for AEW to do and complimenting whenever they or WWE have done it. I think it takes a match that even for me felt like more important. And I think we know as viewers that in a meta subconscious way, if the wrestling company is going to the trouble to create a video package and pull a couple facts out of about these wrestlers that makes the match feel a little more intriguing in kind of like a sports-like way, that means they're not just throwing them in the ring to fill TV time and fill a few minutes. Like, they put thought into hyping it. They put thought into what it means and what the background of these wrestlers is. Therefore, it probably is a big enough deal to stick around and watch and invest in and feel as important. And I think the wrestlers, I mean, we had three really good matches on this show that were of substantial length. Seems like the wrestlers are trying to live up to the hype. You know, they're not just there to kind of fill time, go through the motions, not get hurt, and, you know, not fall on Vince's radar for working too hard or not hard enough. It just feels like a different work ethic right now. And part of that is these video packages. And, I mean, there's a lot of things Paul Levesque's doing that just – and I thought this when he was, you know, running NXT, and that's why I said, you know, NXT was my favorite hour of wrestling pre-Wednesday Night War, is there's just all these things that he led that when he was at the helm that he led that I believe is the best way to present pro wrestling. It's the best framework. It's the best way to underline and emphasize and get the most out of what is done and to not do too much. And, you know, I mean, a larger issue, I don't think there were any wasted moves on the show. I didn't think wrestlers took undue chances. I didn't think things got blurry or viewers got numb to what was happening. There's just an exciting cadence and pace where everything has a chance to breathe and be emphasized and seem to have an impact. And as this email says, the video package is a key component in that. How do you feel?
Yeah, I go back to your opening comments on this following the email when you said certainly it's not an idea that you came up with. And I think that's key here in that what Triple H has done thus far are not new or novel concepts. It's just basic stuff. It's basic booking 101.
It's not radical.
No, not at all. That WWE has gotten away from for such a long period of time. And it's so logical and it just makes so much sense that if you are going to have a multi-segment wrestling match on your three-hour show, that you would put a little bit of effort, even just 60 seconds, into explaining to your audience at home why it matters. And it doesn't just the advantages to doing something like that are not just more importance on the match itself. It also makes the two wrestlers involved seem more important. It makes the championship, in this case the U.S. title that was on the line, seem more important. And it makes the fans in the arena feel like they're seeing something more important, something that makes it worth their while to take time out of their schedule to come out on a Monday night and attend Monday Night Raw and spend their hard-earned money to be there. And it also makes the people who are watching on TV at home feel like they are spending their time wisely because they're going to see a 20-minute match that they have been told by the company has some relative importance, and they don't feel like they've wasted their time at the end of the night. I can get good wrestling from any number of companies at any given time. I mean, there is a plethora of it. There's probably more good wrestling out there available at my fingertips now than any other time in history. And WWE has had great wrestling under Vince McMahon. But where they have lacked for a very long time is storytelling. And my favorite pro wrestling is when the match quality can hit a crescendo that you can only achieve when the story is there behind it.
Yeah.
And for the first time in years, WWE is getting to a point where they are able to do that on weekly television. AJ Styles versus Bobby Lashley wasn't the most important match of all time by any means, but if it had happened a couple of months ago, I can't necessarily tell you that I would have sat there and paid attention. And if I wasn't watching the show live, there's a chance I might fast forward through some of it not because I don't like Styles or Bobby Lashley. I like them both a lot. But in the Vince McMahon era, a multi-segment match for the U.S. title on a Vince McMahon show, you're telling me it just doesn't matter, that it's filling time. And there hasn't been a situation yet under Triple H where I felt like, oh, they're just throwing this out there to fill 20 minutes.
And I think the things that Paul Levesque is doing better right now are making, I think, the show more enjoyable. And I think it will put them on a positive trajectory or mitigate a drop-off. But it is early. And as you noted, there's some things that Levesque is inheriting from Vince McMahon. The roster, the roster split, the way the wrestlers are aligned and what they're built, what their characters are. The baggage, on a negative sense, the baggage that comes from a character being misused or overused, mm-hmm. Overexposed. And that stuff that's going to take, you know, 6, 9, probably closer to 9 months to kind of just work through completely, work
but
out
man,
of
he's
it.
He's already trying to shake that off a lot of guys. And you can see it. I mean, look at someone like Kevin Owens. There is a dramatic shift.
Absolutely. What we're also going to find out, though, is Paul Levesque on the, flip side of things, benefiting from some things that Vince McMahon did in ways that irritated us, seemed counterproductive or overbearing. But at the core, there was something about the cadence and the star building and the presentation that we're going to find out Levesque is benefiting from. While he's subtracting negatives, he's benefiting from some of those framework positives. And he'll actually like burn out or not have that undercurrent that arguably Vince McMahon did, at least with some of his top stars, that led to some crescendos at big events. There's still things to prove with Paul Levesque. And I'm not saying that to be skeptical, but I'm just saying it's not entirely – Levesque's inheriting McMahon. It's not all bad. There might be some things he's just not good at that we just don't see yet that in terms of long-term booking. There's nothing that indicates to me that's the case. I want to say that. But it's just too early to tell. So as optimistic as I am about what Levesque has done to give a fresh coat of paint to these shows and change the format and the presentation and subtract irritations and add some positives like these video packages, we still got a long journey. It's going to be interesting, but it's not isolated. Hector from Chicago emailed. He said, I really liked how they aired the video package for the Lashley Styles match, talking about their past in paths. I enjoyed the show overall. I feel like sometimes when I tout video packages, some people are like, oh, you know, yeah, sure. Why do I want to see a video package? I just want to see people, you know, hitting each other in the ring and yelling on the microphone. And yes, I'm framing that sort of flippantly, but no, I mean, I don't think I'm alone. I don't think it's old school in any way. I think Paul Levesque, and I'm glad he's doing a good job with it, because I think he's showing what is hard to put into words that video packages can do to raise the level of what's coming up later on the show. And tonight was another example of it. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the instant reframing of both the Intercontinental and the United States titles were a big deal. And he did that with video packages right out of the gate. And he's been, you know, they've been doing these video packages for Bobby Lashley's U.S. title defenses, which, again, I think is a huge net positive. It harkens back to the 2015 run that John Cena had, where he was defending the U.S. title every week in these multi-segment matches and raising the prominence of that title, which is something that they desperately need without a world champion on Raw. So I think that it's been a huge positive that it started with the promo packages building up the Intercontinental and the U.S. title. The one caveat that I or sort of the reservation that I had going in to the takeover here was that I was not nearly as high on NXT once it hit USA Network and went head-to-head with AEW. I thought that they lost a significant amount of direction when they moved from 1 to 2 hours. And so I, like you, NXT, Black and Gold NXT 1 hour format on WWE Network is my favorite wrestling program of the last many, many years. I look at that as some of, you know, my favorite weekly television as a wrestling fan. I thought that the Takeover specials were far and away the best pro wrestling that I could ask for my personal taste. And I thought they lost a lot of that when they moved to the two-hour format. So I had some concerns that Triple H would be unable to sort of find his footing in a way that would be a net positive to me, taking over so much main roster TV.
Yeah.
I mean, not only does he get the 2 hour SmackDown, but he gets 3 hours of Raw. And we know based on his own comments publicly that he detests the 3rd hour of Raw. Now we know it's not going away. So it's something that he just has to learn to book and to live with. And I think that is probably one of the things that we're going to look back on it and say that it's a positive that he inherited from Vince McMahon in the beginning, because he came into a show that was already in progress. So the storylines were fully formed and he's able to come in and put his own spin on those angles. But by and large, there are enough angles running to fill the TV time that WWE has right now. So when those angles conclude and we start seeing the stories that Vince McMahon laid out conclude and move on, and we start to get fresh new ideas, can he keep up the level of sort of, you know, crossed and I's dotted? Can he that level up once it's his show fully? And like you said, I don't think we've seen anything to date that suggests that he can't do it, but it is something to kind of watch out for.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, if we look at the NXT example and you know, what you said is totally rational. The difference is, if there are relevant differences to NXT losing something when expanded to 2 hours, was some unfortunate timing of injuries. I think that affected NXT and their ability to suddenly double. But they were also used to booking in a different way. That, you know, they were taping multiple shows and suddenly they're you know, being live more often. And you also just had a roster built for and a booking crew built for a 1 hour show that suddenly was doing a 2 hour show. On Raw, Hunter's walking in and he's got Ed Koski and company used to doing this. You know, they've got their routine, they've got their pattern, and they have a roster that, you know, for better or for worse, segment by segment, was filling 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't something NXT had. And so he's actually kind of subtracted certain things and expanded other things and wedged in other things like these video packages and some longer interviews, or longer backstage interviews that still aren't very long, but they're a little bit longer. And it's just, he's adjusted everything, but he inherited something that was used to being 3 and 2 hours, respectively, Monday and Friday. And but so far, so good. All right, let's go to our next caller here. 914, you are up next. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Brad in New York. How are you guys?
I'm doing good, Brad. Good to hear from you. What are
good,
your thoughts?
No, thanks for having me. Okay, so, I actually have a question. You know, we saw the women's tag team, you know, tournament stuff continue tonight. Now, on Friday, you had a thing with Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons. And as you know, Zoe Stark has this huge match tomorrow night with Mandy Rose for the NXT Women's Championship, which, you know, I know this is a little off topic from Raw, and I'll get back to it. But I really thought Zoe had a tremendous chance of potentially winning this match tomorrow night, just based on what I was seeing and the way they were kind of booking her going in. And, I mean, do you think we're going to see Zoe Stark coming into this tag team women's tournament as the NXT champion? Like, do you think that's a way that Triple H is trying to get eyes on that championship, or you think that's just too weird and it's kind of an indicator that she will probably lose tomorrow night at this NXT pay-per-view thing?
My leaning would be it's more an indication she's not going to win, but it's new in Levesque's run. You know, part of what made the Vince McMahon produce shows less exciting is we sort of knew what his tendencies were. And with Levesque, you know, it's like having a new pet in the house. I mean, you don't know yet. You know what are they going to wake you up in the morning? Are they going to, you know, like chew things when you're gone? Are they going to be a good watchdog? Are they going to love your neighbors or not? Like with Levesque, it's just like, it's new. It's like, it's a new person in a familiar environment. And that's sort of what I mean by the new, you know, pet. You know, it's just like he's here to stay, but we don't know quite yet how the routine is going to go. And that's an early, you know, I don't think it's a big indicator of his, but it's an interesting indicator of, you know, does he want to, you know, because I don't think he spent a lot of time on NXT at this point, nor should he. His hands are full and there's higher priorities. But you would think at some point NXT will start to show significant signs of his influence. It's a little weird because it was his show for so long and then wasn't, and some of those fingerprints are still there. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a strong opinion one way or the other of how it's going to go, but I do think it like you said, it certainly would be indicative of Mandy Rose retaining if Vince McMahon were still in power. But it's also possible that this is an edict from Triple H. I mean, to get the title on fresh blood, to indicate that there is a new era coming for NXT. There's also always the chance that, you know, it's time to bring Mandy Rose back to the main roster. I mean, she was sent to NXT presumably by Vince McMahon to kind of anchor that brand, and it's possible that Triple H feels more comfortable with her on the main roster, or thinks that there's something that he can do with her, and with, you know, Gigi and what's the other partner's name? I forget.
JC Jane. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's possible that he thinks that there's something more that he can do with them there. So, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. But I also don't necessarily know that. So see, to me, like, I thought that when we had the NXT champion, when we had Bron Breakker showing up on Raw recently, back during like WrestleMania season, it felt a little messy. And thus far, that has not been the name of the game with the way that Triple H has promoted the show. So it wouldn't surprise me if he did not want NXT champions to be crossing over in any significant way right now while he establishes, you know, who's who and where people are falling in line on the card. So I guess I probably still lean overall toward Mandy retaining, but I wouldn't rule anything out at this point.
Well, on Raw, if you have a minute. So, you know, look, I got to be honest with you guys, and this is probably an unpopular opinion. I didn't think this show was very good at all. And, you know, and I'm a mark for WWE. I love WWE. And I, you know, this is not, you know, me just calling into bash or anything like that. But to me, first of all, I don't need, and maybe I'm in the minority, but I don't need every match to be a 20-minute banger or squash. I understand we had the Veer squash tonight. To me, I don't need to go into every single match knowing the finish isn't coming for 14 to 18 minutes of airtime. I think what Triple H is trying to do is show these wrestlers, listen, you're going to get your time. We're not going to give you these four-minute stupid matches. We're not going to give you a six-minute nothing and make you travel 1,000 miles for that. You know, we're going to give you guys your due and your airtime. I understand it's a three-hour show. I totally get it. But to me, I don't – you know, there is something to be said for a shorter and sweet match that, you know, maybe the finish just happens quickly and it is what it is. And also, like, I don't think anything tonight was really built towards going towards the premium live event other than maybe intensifying Riddle and Seth a little bit. I mean, to me, this was a show that if I had missed it and I had been traveling or something – I really didn't miss anything. And that's, you know, that's something that, you know, I guess you could say about previous Raw shows in the past, but I didn't think this was very good. I mean, I you know, maybe there's something wrong with me, but I had called in on Friday and I also had mentioned that I think Triple H is taking a lot of the lightheartedness out of the, out of the product, and I saw more of that again tonight. You know, Kevin Owens, you know, look, he, at times, you know, I understand they're going in a different direction with the character, but he'd make you laugh. He'd give you a smile. He'd give you a chuckle. Riddle, now a very serious character, it seems like, going forward, or at least for this feud. You know, this is not lighthearted Riddle. This is now a serious guy. It just seems like everything's trending in a more adult, serious direction. I had brought this up on Friday when I called, but again, I just didn't think this was that great of a show, and it didn't really progress anything to me. And that's kind of just something I did want to just point out to you guys or bring up that I don't know how you feel about that.
Sure. No, and I think that's part of – I mean, what you're expressing is part of why we don't know what these numbers are going to be and what the, like, long-term effect of doing things in a way that Brandon and I like and – that, you know, there's anecdotal positive feedback, but, you know, I mean, Vince McMahon had lots of flaws, but he had a lot of experience looking at numbers, having people give him feedback on what people were staying tuned for. He, you know, he had instincts that he probably couldn't even explain that he just did because he had enough money and power to just do things the way that felt right, even if he couldn't explain it. And there might be some things Paul Levesque's doing that are going to lead to some people thinking like Brad, which is, you know, I don't come here to watch a long, athletic, competitive match as often as Paul Levesque is featuring it. I need to see new things. I'm taking my phone out and looking at it for 5 minutes because I know it's going to be a long match, and I want to see different people every 8 to 12 minutes. I need a new ring introduction or a new person on my screen to keep me interested. And I'm not saying that's like Brad's perspective, but I'm saying some of those people might be out there, and it might be a larger number than we realize. And so there could be some growing pains or some adjustments. Brandon, what did you think listening to Brad's take?
Yeah, I don't think that it's wrong to feel that way either. And I don't even want to necessarily send the message that I was, you know, in love with this show. Like I wouldn't go to bat for this show as being great or out of the ordinary or, you know, anything that I would, you know, praise to my friends and say, oh, you got to watch Raw tonight. For me, it's more of the wholesale changes that make me feel like on a week-to-week basis I'm watching a show that matters. So, like, I thought that tonight mattered in the sense that, you know, we got further development of Riddle and Seth. We got a sort of a repositioning of Kevin Owens and a statement of purpose for Drew McIntyre. We got advancement in the women's tag team title tournament. And we got more or less a close to the storyline that had been brewing for a while between Theory and Dolph Ziggler. So this wasn't a world beater show by any means. I don't think that, you know, this was like knock it out of the park, five-star matches, and I want to watch it again. But it's a show that held my attention for the 3 hours that it was on, which is a really challenging thing to do with a three-hour Raw filled with commercials. And it kept me invested and hopeful that I'll see at least more of what I liked about this show next week. So I think that is something that I think we'll have to be mindful of going forward in our praise, because it's not like every week is going to knock it out of the park. And I think that the criticisms that Brad has are perfectly valid. And, you know, to some extent, I agree with some of them. This wasn't a perfect show by any means. But for me, the positivity comes from just feeling like the wrestlers that I'm watching are on an actual journey, and we're going week to week with a lot of positive reinforcement happening and a lot of care and attention to detail, which is not something that we were getting previously.
Yeah. All right.
No, and thank you for that.
I was just going to say
thank you for that. But my point is, like, if every match is a 20-minute banger, then no match is a 20-minute banger. Like, you like to be, oh, wow, that was a really great longer match. And that's what I mean. It's not like I don't like seeing a longer match that has a little bit more to it. But if every match is going to be like that, then it's almost like none of them are like that. You know what I mean? So It's listen, you guys are great. Thanks. Keep up the great work, and I'll let you get to other callers. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Brad. Good to hear from you. And I think having, I mean, tonight the I'm trying to think of the match length. Like the main event went about 15 minutes. Lashley Styles went just over 20, and Drew and KO went 15. It's a small sample size at this point. There's going to be some matches that have a commercial break that go 12 and some that go 18. Some are going to end before the commercial break. You're not going to see a Drew KO match or a Lashley Styles match end in under 9 minutes without a commercial break. They're just not going to tell, like with a clean finish. There might be an angle, a run-in, an attack, but you're not going to see wrestlers of that caliber losing that quickly. That's just not the way pro wrestling in general typically tells stories. Not that doing it now and then, like having a pinfall or submission during a commercial break is something you should do once a year or twice a year max, just to remind people it can happen. I mean, sometimes you can have a quick finish out of nowhere and make a statement with that and keep people on their toes. I think Gabe Sapolsky was an advocate for that and did that in his booking in ROH at times. You know, but you run the risk of fans who paid money to go to the show being upset. Hey, I came here to be entertained for a while, and now it's already over. So you have to pick your spots carefully. But to me, you know, if matches go 15 or 20 minutes and you got three of them on a three-hour show, I'm not going to spend a lot of time thinking that that's going to be some sort of huge turnoff for people.
I think that for a while there with the three-hour Raw, they were doing that anyway. There were a lot of multi-segment matches on Raw that I completely agree. Those were the types of matches where I would take out my phone and kind of start scrolling, because in the Vince McMahon era, it felt like they didn't matter. And in all likelihood, they would have ended in a DQ or a run-in finish or something of that sort. So I just didn't feel like I was missing anything of importance. So I definitely, while even though I don't necessarily feel that way about tonight's show and the shows that we've seen so far under this regime, I completely understand that sentiment, because I felt that way very frequently with Raw.
Let's keep rolling through calls here. If you want to call us, please do. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that places you on our switchboard, so we know that you want to be on the show. If you are a new WWE viewer or have been away for a while or haven't listened to us live in a while, consider yourself even more encouraged to call in. Up next is Evan in Chicago. Evan, good to hear from you. What stood out for you on Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Really momentous week. As said, Mandy Rose is defending tomorrow night against Zoe Stark, which is big. Big week for the women. Again, momentous. NXT is going to be great to watch tomorrow. And it's really a testament. It's really going to be a testament of how far NXT has come as far as, you want to call it a Paul Levesque era. Really watching NXT, it taught me so many things. And one thing that I've gotten out of it is you really can't play favorites with these guys, especially when they're all coming at you from different angles and perspectives, where only guys that you can really open your eyes for, you can get the most out of. And for that, I show respect to guys like Damian Priest. When you see things through his eyes and the way he's put in the work and how far he's come from, where he's come from and the backgrounds around that, it makes him much more of a respectable character. And honestly, it's going to be so great to see what happens next week in Toronto when he faces Edge. And I have nothing but love for those guys. And I feel as though it's going to be a great deal to watch. And I can't help but feel as though, back in the city, I'm going to miss out on anything or anything like that. But it's still going to be great to watch. Again, these are guys that are moving differently now, and you don't really know if they're leaving the foot in the guest book or if they're carving their own path nowadays. And it's just like, you know, these things have to apply themselves in it in a certain way that, again, only we can open our eyes to. Kevin Owens really stepped up tonight. And I got to give him props for the lengths that he went to let it be known. Like, you know, we hear the words that's being said. We got to hear each other out. And watching that unfold between him and Drew McIntyre You can say it never happened, but as you watch it, you can honestly say that, you know, it was great to watch that, you know, all break down the way it is. It's getting close to Cardiff, and I would like to see tensions shift the way they have been continuously. And again, it's all going to unfold in a great deal. And I just want to find out, you know, where that would lead a guy like Drew McIntyre going into Cardiff, knowing that he has guys that are actually pushing for him to make the most of it while he's out there.
Now, this was a big week for Drew and Kevin Owens, and it took us a while to get to the topic because we've been talking more kind of broadly. But specifically, that was, to use the word of the day, the word of the week, the word of the summer, it was a banger of a promo. Kevin Owens unleashed. Drew had a comeback that matched or exceeded Kevin Owens, both in intensity and sort of alpha charisma and the points he was making. It's interesting how hard they're letting him hit on the schedule that he keeps compared to Roman Reigns and even Brock Lesnar a bit, he's mentioned going into SummerSlam. And I thought this was the glimpse of Kevin Owens that people almost gave up on thinking could still exist on WWE TV. And this was the best Drew McIntyre that we've seen since the Thunderdome era. It felt like somebody who was given permission to speak his mind and is also understanding in a competitive environment, he needs to step up and make himself seem like he is every bit as relevant of a top-tier star potentially as Roman Reigns, a contemporary of his. They're within a year of each other's age, or very close to, about, they're about a year apart. And at Survivor Series a couple years back, it was like, well, who should win? And, you know, who's on the trajectory to be more valuable? And now Roman has negotiated a much bigger deal than Drew has financially for a lot fewer dates and TV appearances. And Drew just made his case. It was like a closing statement in a debate in a storyline and kayfabe sense. You know, it was enough storyline. It wasn't just eye-rolling. But there was sort of an argument to another type of fan going, you know, you should cheer for me for another reason because I love this and I want to be here and I'm here on my off day. So I just thought there was a lot. Drew was showing a lot there in terms of saying, I'm going to step up and I'm going to grab this main event spot and not let it get away. And with Paul Levesque in charge, I think I can be heard and this is my time to step up. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, this is my favorite part of the night, the promo particularly, although the match was really, really good as well. I wasn't keen on the finish, though I understand why they did it. That's sort of one of those Vince McMahon holdovers that we're getting here where you have the multi-segment match that ends in a disqualification, but I at least it had some sense to it, and at least they gave it a definitive end there with Owen still hitting the stunner on McIntyre after the Usos attacked. So as far as the promo goes, I thought that they were playing with fire a little bit when Owens came out there just kind of on fire, given how receptive the crowd is to Kevin Owens, whether he is a babyface or heel. And they sort of sided with him there in the beginning. And I was sitting there kind of watching, thinking like, man, Drew has got to have something that matches or surpasses this, or this is going to make him look pretty bad. And fortunately for him and for everyone watching, because it made for such a good segment, he just blasted out of the gates with a ton of fire, a ton of babyface heart, and, you know, very easily got the crowd on his side, matched Kevin Owens' intensity. And I thought it was the best we've seen out of Drew McIntyre in well over a year. I think that the last couple of weeks coming out without the sword has been a big step up in terms of presentation. And I think that Drew's intensity, realizing that he is getting thrust back into the main event spot, is a really big deal. And this is sort of the first time, I think, in Roman Reigns' 2-year run where it genuinely feels like McIntyre could be the guy. Now, I think I still lean toward Reigns retaining, but I don't put it past a big crowning moment, you know, overseas. They want this to do big numbers. They want it to be a big deal for the European crowd. So this is really the first time where it feels like there is an outside chance that you know, Reigns gets got, essentially. And I think that they have done an excellent job at rebuilding McIntyre, because when this match was heavily rumored throughout the spring and early summer after Clash at the Castle was announced, and you know, people rightfully assumed that McIntyre would be Reigns' challenger at the show, I didn't think they could get there. I didn't think that they could get Drew back to a point where he felt like a legitimate contender, and they've done a really, really good job. And Drew has done a great job of getting serious and bringing the fire and feeling like a main event act again. And they need him. They need him to be a main event act.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, even if I'm just, they're giving me enough to talk myself into thinking the outcome at Clash at the Castle is in doubt. Then give me enough to talk myself into it. You know, I mean, sometimes that's all I want as a viewer, is just to be given a story to talk myself into or to believe in, even if intellectually I think I'm making it more of a question mark than it really is. Let me get immersed in the story. You know, like main characters in TV shows are in jeopardy all the time. Major action hero movies have an action hero in jeopardy early in the movie. You know they're not going to die or be killed off, but you still are into the drama because the storytelling in the TV or movie is compelling, and they go all in, and they do everything they can to convince you in that moment without you intellectually thinking, well, of course this person's not going to die, to get emotionally wrapped up in it. And that can work in pro wrestling. You know, you can tell a story that makes people who are rooting for Drew and against Roman. And by the way, that's a challenge. Roman's starting to get cheered more now. Mm-hmm. Drew's got to go. Part of this, not to shift my point that I'm making here, but I'm going to. Part of what Drew is doing is letting fans know, don't go out there and cheer Roman because you think he's a big star. And I'm just here to be fed to him. And I'm the guy with the sword who's lost his way since the COVID era. I'm here to play. I'm here to be a top guy. I'm here to be a top guy. And I'm going to show you and tell you I can be a top guy. I can be a champion who floats between both shows and represents Raw and SmackDown and takes on challenges from both shows. I'm that guy. I want you to know that I am convinced I can be that guy. I'm given the time and space to tell you I can be that guy. And when you have to do that, and now people might reject it or roll their eyes or yawn or tune out. You never know when you do that, but you can't be a top act if you don't declare it and walk the walk. Or talk to talk about wanting to walk the walk. And that's what he did there. And so, you know, intellectually you might think, no, there's a bigger story arc they want to tell with Roman, but you know what? Maybe not. This is the Paul Levesque era. All bets are off. He is in charge of telling stories. And if he wants to make a big statement, maybe one of those statements is we're going to have that title change at Clash at the Castle. And, you know, nobody can have the certitude they used to with Vince McMahon about certain things because it's so new in this run.
I thought that this would be how they – initially, I thought that, you know, if they were going to get a title on Drew, that this would be how they would split the titles. But they're just not going that direction, so.
Yeah, they're not. Karrion Kross absent tonight. Brief mention by Drew when he was listing possible opponents. I don't know what that means, but – If without Cross this week, they aren't going to have a Cross-Drew match next week on Raw. There could be an angle next week that would lead to a match on that show, but that's not the way Levesque's working so far. So go ahead, Brandon. Yeah.
Well, Cross is meant to be a SmackDown guy, right? So.
Oh, that's true. No, that's actually a good point. It's these days, it's so hard to keep track. So if Cross shows up, let's shift that then. If Cross shows up Friday and attacks Drew or does something, then there's still room for Drew and Cross to have a main event to draw a big rating leading into Clash at the Castle.
Right.
And Cross could have shown up tonight and, you know, beat up Drew and, you know, gone rogue. But it's sure. A very good point. I'm glad you interjected that. But I'm curious where the pace of the Cross-Drew saga, and if ultimately Cross ends up involved in that match as Clash at the Castle. Either because he and Drew have had a match and he's trying to get revenge or something that happened, or they haven't yet, and it's supposed to springboard into something to give Drew an opponent to face, either after coming up short because of Cross or having won one or both titles. And you need an opponent who you can work house shows with, because Roman's not going to work house shows or, you know, be there every week on TV, because Roman won't be. And maybe Roman takes some time off and then gets revved up for a return. And the Cross thing was introduced as Triple H sort of hot-shotting someone who's got some flaws, has some shortcomings, but he knows he's familiar with him, he can drop him in, and he knows he and Drew can just go out there and have some matches and get him to the next pay-per-view. So we're kind of keeping an eye on that. I don't know if it makes Cross's involvement makes me think it's more or less likely that Drew wins, but if Cross is not on SmackDown this Friday, and he didn't do some sort of run-in on Raw tonight, they're running out of time to get a quick TV-centric program in, which then makes me suspicious he will be involved in the finish of Drew Roman, which, you know, I mean, he could interfere and it doesn't affect the outcome. He could try to interfere and it doesn't work, or he could attack Drew or Roman after the match too. Him being at the Clash doesn't mean he's integral in the outcome, but it's a floating piece out there that's worth considering with only a few weeks left here.
Yeah, they're certainly playing with fire if they had him directly involved in the finish, especially if it's some sort of you know, smosh finish or just a dusty finish. If they're going to get Cross involved, because you're playing with an audience that hasn't had a pay-per-view event that has had any, you know, relevance in what, 30 something years. So I think that they're going to want to see their big time main event and have it have a legitimate conclusion.
Absolutely. All right. If you want to give us a call, phone lines are still open, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us still, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. We'll go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, so I didn't call for the last few weeks because when Becky got hurt, I was like, I can't talk about this. It was painful and everything. I had the courage to talk about anything on Raw because Becky was gone. I was like, oh, no, I can't talk about it. But anyway, I'm okay with it. I'm still feeling the pain, but I'm okay with it now for right now. I accepted the fact that she's going to be gone for a while, but whatever. But for tonight, though, I thought – This for Raw, just in general, since SummerSlam's been pretty good. I've been enjoying Io Sky and Dakota Kai, and look, I'm not even a Bayley fan, but she's been good with these two women on that came up to Raw, and I am enjoying the this whole tag team thing too is really interesting too, because I was really confused because they're doing this six-woman tag match at Clash at the Castle, and I was like, okay, fine. So when is the finals going to happen? Like, and because if they're doing already Alexa and Asuka and Io and Dakota next week, then okay, fine. Then whoever wins between Raquel and Aaliyah versus whoever's going to be the winner on SmackDown, face off to each other. It's like, when is that match happening then, if that's the case? Because if the six-man tag match is happening at Clash of the Castle, when is this tag team title match going to happen in the finals or whatever?
Yeah, they haven't made that clear yet, have they, Brandon, when the finals take place? I was, you know, at one point assuming it'd be at Clash at the Castle, but now with the six-woman tag, it's not.
Yeah, I don't know. They definitely haven't indicated when exactly it's going to be. I assume that we're going to get – are we getting the final opening round match on SmackDown? Is that
– Yes, and
okay.
Then the semifinals next
week. And then the semi – yeah, so the semi next week on
so
Raw
they could,
and then on SmackDown.
So they can headline either Raw or SmackDown, or not headline, you know what I mean? Have it be a featured match the week leading into Clash at the Castle.
Yeah, they'll have the other semi quarterfinal will be this Friday. So then you've got next Monday and next Friday for the you'll have this next Monday and next Friday for the semifinals, and then the finals could be on the 29th edition of Raw or on the Friday, the second edition of SmackDown. So yeah, they do have time to do it the following week if they want to do that. I just kind of imagine that EO and Dakota Kai would likely be in the finals, considering they're the only true team in there. But I don't know, they could go the direction of Asuka and Alexa Bliss as well. I really like the six woman tag though at Clash at the Castle, because it's a match that feels like it matters, and it also saves the Bayley and Bianca Belair match for a little bit down the line. So it's stretching out an angle that otherwise they could have blown through right away, which is important in that women's division because they don't have a ton of major challengers for Bianca right now. So I really like going the six-woman route because it feels important. Because you know they're already embroiled in this conflict, it sets up the Bayley and Bianca Belair match, and also you can sell it as special for the Cardiff audience because they're getting Bayley's first match back.
Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, and speaking of with Bianca too, it feels like she has been not in limbo and also Bayley as well, because they're probably just waiting until they actually face each other at Clash at the Castle or just have a singles match itself, because it's about them, but is it about them, if that makes sense, because they have been kind of not really going to each other itself one-on-one, because it's been about it's been about Dakota, it's been about Lexan because of this whole six-woman tag situation, and then also the tag team championship situation as well. So Bianca's been kind of been invisible in some ways ever since kind of Becky's injury. So that's interesting. So, and also too, when Becky comes back here, she'll have a already feud with Bayley too. So that'll be awesome to see. I think too, Raw has been overly interesting than SmackDown compared to Raw. Raw is just interesting than to Raw because I've been, oh my God, what am I saying? Raw's thing that SmackDown because it's because of the fact that, you know, we have the women's situation, you have what they're doing with Lashley and him being a dominant United States champion, and them really hyping that up. And then also too was with I think this whole thing with Seth Rollins and Riddle, I would hope they're doing this, they'll really do a match at Clash at the Castle and that blow it off just like they did at SummerSlam. I hopefully they will, because I want them to do the match and move on. This feels like a filler feud anyway for Seth, because I was like, it feels like to me doesn't feel that important. It just feels like a filler feud. I guess I could say the same thing for Theory too. He's kind of in limbo, but he had his issues of why he wasn't around the last few weeks. But we think with Rollins, like, where he's going
yeah.
With Riddle.
Yeah, I do. It feels, I mean, they've done everything that a feud should have, Brandon. You know, heel stomping away at the babyface taking time off to sell it, giving a fiery promo, charging to the ring. It does feel like kind of a weird fit to me, and I'm not sure why. I haven't been able to put my finger on it. I think I kind of know what Kyle is getting at. But I don't put a lot of stock into just me having sort of a feeling, you know, about it. I mean, if I just sort of object more of a legacy of accomplishment, and I don't know, it seems like, yeah, it's just they're sort of at a crossroads that feels more we were out of options than this was sort of a natural place for them to go. That said, I think it'll be a really good match. I think we haven't talked about this yet, but Seth is the same Seth, I think, but Riddle has dropped some of the hey dopiness and is showing a more intense side. Now, maybe that would have happened under Vince McMahon because he's gotten stomped, and he's selling that he's been selling it with time away. Maybe it's the natural, obvious thing he would have done, but probably not. I think we're getting a glimpse into Riddle keeping what people find adorable about him while also giving him a more grown-up edge, a more professional, serious athlete edge. What do you think?
Yeah, there is definitely something about this feud, and I think we've kind of determined that none of us can quite put our finger on what exactly feels off about it, but it does feel off. It feels like two guys that are feuding by process of elimination because there was just no one left, and they both need something to do. So they've done everything that they need to do and can do to get it ramped up, but it just doesn't feel all that important. I thought that they kind of got off track at SummerSlam, and I didn't see anyone else really echo this sentiment, but when I was watching that show, it felt to me like they sort of went in the wrong direction a bit, in the sense that the heel Seth Rollins came out and essentially, rather than Rollins sort of backing down to Riddle's ill-advised challenge, which you would typically see the heel do, he not only accepted the challenge, but he just beat the crap out of Riddle. And it felt to me a little bit like a statement of dominance on the part of Rollins, where they were just definitively saying, like, yeah, we view Rollins on a higher tier than Riddle. And going in, I didn't necessarily feel that way. I thought that Rollins had come down a little bit and Riddle had risen, and they were sort of on level playing field. So I came out of SummerSlam just with a weird feeling about the whole thing, and that hasn't really gone away since. I think that tonight got them back on track to some extent. Having Riddle back out there in front of the crowd again certainly helped, and I thought that getting that wide shot of him standing in the lower bowl of the arena was helpful. I thought that that was a cool moment for him. But the biggest story of that segment, I think, was Seth's attire, which I get a kick out of pretty much every week. I can't imagine, like, I don't know if WWE is giving him like a clothing budget to work with, but man, that guy has got to spend so much on his wardrobe. Becky too. There's just something a little off about the whole thing, but I do agree. I think they'll have a great match. I assume it will be at Clash. I think that is official now. And afterward, I don't know. I don't know where those two guys go. I mean, obviously, whatever they had planned for Riddle was sort of derailed by the injury to Randy Orton, and that is looking like it's going to be long term. So it leaves Riddle in sort of limbo, and Rollins. You'd think that they'd have something for Rollins coming out of the Cody Rhodes feud, but they just didn't. I mean, there just wasn't anything down the pipeline, and that has a lot to do with how thin the roster is. I don't know. I don't know where Rollins goes after this.
And that's why with Cody out, with Randy out, I mean, this did just sort of like, what do we do with these two? Yeah. Oh, this feud with each other. It's why I think adding Karrion Kross is a solid addition. I mean, beggars can't be choosers. He has main event experience under Paul Levesque's guidance. Paul knows what he brings. I assume he's acutely aware of his shortcomings. He may not think they're as big of a deal as I do, but he might, and just he might be better working around him. Obviously, adding Scarlett and giving him hair and a cooler look all makes him more valuable than how he's presented on the main roster. But, when the bell rings, there could still be some issues, unless, of course, he was working with an injury that slowed him down before. But we're at a point where that's happening. We're like Levesque's looking around going, I just need some bodies. I need some people who aren't damaged by Vince McMahon too much, or I can rehabilitate them and get them back into the mix. By the way, going back to the original topic with Riddle, do you like what you're seeing with Riddle, and how much do you make of this being how he's going to be presented past the Seth feud?
If they want Riddle to be a significant player on Raw and have him in high-level feuds, I don't think that he can be as dorky as sort of out to lunch or high, essentially. I don't think that he can be quite at that level to be taken seriously as a main event guy. I thought that we were going to get, and we did get a little bit of an indicator of what he could be in that brief feud with Roman Reigns that looked like it was supposed to be back at Money in the Bank and then got shifted to SmackDown because of the Randy Orton injury. I thought that we got a look at what Riddle could potentially be, and I think that for my personal enjoyment of that character and for what I look for in a main event act in pro wrestling, I think that I prefer this iteration. But that's not to say that I don't think that some of the surfer dude, you know, stoner aspects of Riddle's character can't come out when the time is right. I think that they just need to be selective in picking the spots. It's not at all unlike the challenge in presenting Big E in a serious manner. I mean, Big E was so long treated as sort of not the butt of the joke, but someone who was, you know, lively and part of all the jokes with New Day. And I think that there was a really, really significant challenge in striking a balance between not losing that jovial nature that people love so much about Big E, but also presenting him as a guy who is really serious when the bell rings and can hurt you and can take a title match very, very seriously. I think they have a similar challenge to work on with Riddle.
All right, Kyle, thanks for the call. I want to shift now to an email from JB from Detroit. Hi, guys. First off, I want to say that between Seth's outfit tonight, as you were speaking of Brandon, and Pretty Deadly in NXT, I'm getting an extreme Zoolander vibe. secondly, I'm glad it seems they're giving Riddle the serious edge that he's lacked most of his main roster run to this point. Thirdly, I absolutely love the intensity in the promo duel between KO and tonight. That was two pros at the top of their craft, both in promos and wrestling in ring. The only thing I didn't like was Drew saying it was a privilege to be wrestling in WWE. I like my strong baby faces to feel like they are true stars and not beholden to the company. That's a good point. Finally, did Hunter give a tell by specifying that the match at Clash at the Castle was for the Universal title? By specifying it's for one belt, I feel like it means it's much more likely Drew is winning. As always, love the show and go VIP. Brandon, what'd you pick up on there?
I didn't notice that. Now I'm going to look, actually, because I'm really, really curious. Not that WWE.com is necessarily super reliable, because they often don't update their stuff quickly, but... let me see here. So they have it listed as undisputed WWE Universal Championship, which is how they've been referring to the dual titles for quite a while.
Right. Yeah.
So I do assume that it is still for both titles. I wouldn't be opposed to them setting up the split in some fashion. Because I do think I would prefer each brand to have its own championship. As much as I like the single title idea, I do think that a brand split works best when each brand has its own champion. So I prefer that option, but I also understand why they would want to keep them unified for the time being. So I assume that we're getting the dual titles.
I am, and part of this just might be the last couple of weeks of elevating the US and IC title, something that, you know, like I've advocated for, and I've hardly been alone on this for decades probably. Mm-hmm. And you get to the point where it's like what I advocated for, you know, the tag team title should be treated as more important, and people just like yell, stop saying it, it's never gonna happen, wait, get over it, stop wasting time. It's like, well, but it
they
can
are.
and I wonder if the elevating of the US and IC title has brought me to a point where I find myself inching more towards being fine with there being one champion, one world champion in WWE floating, and being an advocate for that happening with the women. And part of it is maybe also just being irritated by AEW's two women's titles and how there just doesn't feel – and, of course, they only have one TV show, so it's not a fair – reason to say Raw and SmackDown shouldn't have separate champions because they have separate shows. But this is part of, you know, maybe Levesque hasn't even finalized his viewpoint on this yet. You know, because there are pros and cons to both. There's absolute strong argument you can make if you're arguing for the single champion, and there's a strong argument you can make for the dual champion, I think you lose some points of argument that become less persuasive when you're not running separate brand house shows where you sort of want the world champion on top, and doesn't really matter in a star-driven era at this point as much for, you know, the annual house show non-TV tour in some of these markets. And you also lose it loses something when you don't have enough wrestlers or enough top stars where it feels like, you know, you're going to end up with an A champion and a B champion anyway, and it's just one extra singles title that means less. And there was a third thing that I was thinking of where there's less of an argument. I can't think of what it was at the moment. But anyway,
I think that I would be more inclined to be in favor of a single title if the champion were not essentially part-time at this point. And that's not me advocating necessarily for taking the title off of Roman Reigns, because I do think that, you know, the title is more important now than it has been in a very long time, and Roman Reigns is a character that I, you know, well documented that I love what they have done with Roman Reigns. But I do think that it makes it a lot more challenging to not only have only one champion spread across the two brands, but to not have that champion appearing on either show on a regular basis.
All right. JB also said, I'm not really sure what the purpose of keeping the 24/7 title around is. Do they think that it gives her actual legitimacy? Also, Corey Graves makes a good point about Dana's dumb line about wrestling for the veterans. I actually think Dakota almost seemed more like the babyface in this match. I thought he was ripping on Jimmy Smith. I guess maybe that's what JB's trying to say. Corey really like unleashed on Jimmy when Jimmy said that Dana, you know, Dana's the veteran in this match. He's like, "What did you say? She's a veteran fighting for the veterans?" And yeah, that was pretty intense. But, you know, when we talk about whether, you know, Paul Levesque's even come to a solid permanent conclusion about what he wants to do with the dual versus single title world champions, I'm curious if he's come to a decision on the 24/7 title too. You know, is this something he's just sort of hanging around, but it hasn't been defended since he took over? Does it just disappear? Is he coming up with some sort of stipulation where maybe Dana puts it up against one of the other championships and just says, if I don't win, then I don't deserve to carry a belt around, and they just kind of get a one-off storyline out of it or something like that? What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm certainly an advocate of getting rid of it. I also think that maybe they're just letting Dana Brooke hold on to it because she's just so damn proud of it. And, you know, I mean, if they want to do that, I guess more power to them. But if it were up to me, they would retire it. I don't mind necessarily the idea of her maybe somehow earning a Raw Women's title match at some point, and offering to put the title up for grabs, and they do sort of like a – and I'm not advocating for this as being like a pay-per-view match or PLE match, because I don't think Dana Brooke is at that level, but you could build to a, you know, Dana Brooke and Bianca Belair match on Raw one week and just have Dana say, you know, look, I'm willing to put my title up on the line, and Bianca can sort of you don't want Bianca gunning for the 24/7 title, so you more just say that it's a stipulation that sort of Dana has put up herself, and then Bianca wins, and the title just goes away. I mean, I'm certainly fine with something like that, but yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like a priority in the first few weeks. I mean, we've seen Dana featured on TV on a pretty consistent basis, and she's carrying the title around, but there has been no attempt to take it from her.
All right, let's go to an email. No, let's actually go to another call. We'll go to air code 660 up next. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
DC from Lawrence, Kansas.
From Lawrence, Kansas? Cool. DC, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
So I haven't really watched wrestling, like to sit down and watch an actual show in such a long time. So I decided this evening that I would look at some highlights and stuff like that. And I saw that Riddle had a 420 bro shirt on. Is that part of the TV-14 thing, or is that something that Hunter is allowing now?
I think it's legal in so many places at this point, and it's, I mean, mainstream broadcast network sitcoms, which, you know, do actually still exist, openly have characters who are not in any controversial way making references to smoking pot. It's just not a stigma anymore. I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know what I mean? The tide has moved, and when something is as legal and readily available as it now is, and, you know, sort of shedding the stigma of decades of, you know, obviously there's people who, you know, overindulge, but you know, I think there's just a point now where people look at it and go, oh, Riddle smokes pot. So, but if I'm a parent bringing an 8-year-old or, you know, an 11-year-old, wherever they start running into pot to a WWE show, I mean, I understand doing it. And then I also just think, is it worth doing it? Like, are they going to alienate some parents who kind of feel like if they go to a WWE show, do they want that, you know, promoted as presented as almost like they're promoting it? And then you go, okay, but what about Steve Austin and beer? Or, you know, like, well, okay, that was the Attitude Era. Are there baby faces that are aimed to a degree at kids in the way that, or at least appeal to kids in the way that Riddle is, who promoted alcohol to the degree that that 420 shirt does? Or, I don't know. I'm just sort of talking through the various points. I don't have a strong opinion either way, but it certainly jumped out to me. And when I say I don't have a strong opinion, like, I can totally hear someone going, ah, they probably shouldn't do that. And I can totally hear someone going, ah, no big deal. You know, come on, it's 2022. I would lose someone if they were super strong and the extreme on either direction. I just think it's like, yeah, I might lean a little – I can listen to people lean a little for, a little against. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, so I can say for certain that this is not a Triple H directive, because Randy Orton and Riddle had a shirt for their tag team prior to Triple H taking over. This was several months ago, so still well in the Vince McMahon era. And it said RK Bro 420 on the front, and the back actually had a viper with Riddle's hair and smoke coming out of the eyes. And it says, I just smoked your ass. So they were doing this a while ago. And I'm looking on WWE shop right now, and they've got a beach towel that has that on it. They've got a 3x5 flag that has that on it. You can get an RK Bro 420 coffee mug. And my personal favorite, Riddle's got a new one of their more like the more like subtle line of clothes, the stuff that the wrestlers don't wear on TV, but they're a little less, you know, like wrestlery. Riddle has a new shirt that is yellow, and it just says The Organic Bro. I mean, they decided that they were cool with this a while back. And Wade, like you, I don't have a strong feeling one way or another. I guess the one area, like you bring up, is Riddle's gimmick is sort of on the surface kid friendly, and you can see kids going to WWE shows thinking that Riddle is a cool guy. And so if they like Riddle, maybe they want his shirt, and his shirt is 420, bro. Like,
yeah,
that's sort of the one.
I mean,
area
you can't wear that. Should WWE merchandise have shirts that you can't wear to school? And I think the answer to that is, sure, why not? But that doesn't mean that the WWE fan base, especially parents, are thinking that that should be a concern. Like, you know, sending your kid to the merch stand with $50, go and come back with something, and then that something is something he can't wear to school because he'll get him kicked out of school, and it would. And it should, by the way. I mean, there's a time and place for it all. And the question is, you know, but you're right, Brent. It's not new. Randy and Riddle were being very open about it. But it is 2022, and it's part of way more part of pop culture references and people who hold positions of power and, you know, and seem to be, you know, very straight-laced, are talking about smoking pot on the weekend. You know, it's just like, it's just it's a different time. So anyway, DC, oh, go ahead, Brandon. Yeah.
Maybe they're not selling it at the stands at shows. I don't know. I haven't been, so I'm not sure, but that would, to me, that would be like the fair compromise. In other words, like, you know, you can see Riddle wear it on TV and you can get it on WWE shop, but you can't, as a 12-year-old, walk up to the merchandise stand with your parents' money and buy it. You know, I think that would be a fair compromise.
And the worst part is if you're at that age, you don't have a big brother, you don't run in a circle where the friends who know what that means, and you show up at school all proud, and all the kids are like, dude, we didn't think you were, you know, whatever. All right. DC, back to you.
I just thought it was cool. I don't know why I thought it was cool. I just thought that it was like cool that they were actually acknowledging something that, you know, is a part of today. It's not what I expected when I turned on, you know, highlights today. I thought we were going to see some New Day jumping around, but I know that that times have changed and so much has changed with wrestling. And speaking of that, I did watch the last 3-4 minutes of the Owens and Drew match. And those are two of my favorite guys, and it looked like they were really enjoying it. It looked like they were laying stuff in pretty snug. I don't think that I've seen them have that much fun in a ring for quite a while now, really. I think Kevin is, like, actually feeling like he gets to be the character that he wants to be, and Drew's trying to, you know, come out of the corniness that he was, you know, carrying out the what did they call that? Is that a claymore? Is that what they called the sword? Is that what it is?
Angela.
Named after his mom.
Unfortunately.
Okay.
I mean.
Okay, but yeah, I just think it's cool to just see those guys, like, feeling a little bit more comfortable and not so, you know, I wouldn't say that they're on edge because they've always been pretty confident guys, pretty confident workers in the ring, but I felt like they were got to be a little bit more them and wrestle a little bit more their style.
I mean, for people who want the right people to be focused on and pushed, I mean, if we step back and just look at the indications from Levesque's booking so far of what he values and who he values, it's not just who he values, but also what he values, because that means new people coming up in the pipeline. Theory went out there and was put against Ziggler for a variety of reasons, but one of them is to show people Theory can work. He can keep up with Ziggler, who's a highly respected WWE wrestler of this era, who can run, you know, just he creates movement, he hits the ropes hard, he takes bumps, he's got good crisp offense, and he's been doing it for a long time. And, you know, you don't think of Ziggler and go, oh, God, this is going to be boring. That's, you know, Ziggler has some shortcomings, but that's never been it. And he put him in there, and we'll get to an email here about the placement of the match, because I think that's an interesting topic. But and Theory didn't look like he was slowing him down. Theory looked like he was keeping up with him. And so there's some things Levesque is booking because it's just the only option he has, or, you know, he's staring down the barrel of 52 weeks of television a year. And, you know, you don't want to spend everything at once. So you're going to end a show with Ziggler and in Theory, but it also serves a purpose of, I want to show people Theory is in that category of wrestlers on the rise who you don't have to think are getting pushed despite their ring work, but it's actually a positive, their ring work. And that is part of what I'm saying is a larger positive with him in terms of Ali and Cedric getting a chance to go out there and be part of a good tag team match, even if they're not getting a major singles push, and having the announcers frame them as maybe the whole will be bigger than the sum of the parts. And obviously Drew and KO getting to express themselves, show their strength on the mic and in the ring and on, you know, just, he's not pushing. I mean, we didn't see Omos tonight. You know, we had a brief comedy segment with Ezekiel, which that family photo was hilarious. And, you know, so there's a little bit of a sense of humor, not taking ourselves too seriously, but it's small doses. And mostly it's, hey, Levesque sending the signal to people who have been watching hate watching WWE, or thinking every other segment or every third segment is good, but there's so much crap, going, I see what you see in these people, and I'm going to put them in a position to shine. Brandon.
I was just going to mention on the subject of Kevin Owens, how cool is it that you know, someone who is just so well respected in the wrestling world for so many legitimate reasons.
He's so good at what he does.
He gets, oh yeah, for sure. And he gets, you know, made fun of essentially for signing with WWE when AEW was on the table. And then people come around to the idea he's doing right by his family. He's signing this big money contract that he absolutely deserves. And you know what? So what if he has to make a fool of himself to do it and get put in positions that he knows and the fans know are beneath him. And now he gets the money and he's presented like a killer again.
Yep. Yep. All right. Anything else you want to add, DC?
Just one more thing. Just a question about the show format, and then I'll get off here. I know you got more callers. So do you think that, because last week I was listening and someone had called in, and I think it might have been someone called in or you were talking to somebody about this, but you were talking about how there's got to be like a variety show, not necessarily in the aspect of, you know, we've got to have people dressed up like Madcap running around honking horns in people's faces and just doing a whole bunch of silly stuff. But like, you have to have, you know, different things for different people. And since WWE is always, well, not always, but, you know, a lot of their content as of the past 10, 15 years has been like kid friendly. Do you think that a more kid-friendly first hour would be good for kids? And then from that, I think you're in the Midwest too, so from that 8 to 10 slot, making that more of the adult content, so kind of making it two different shows like it used to be, like in 98 where they would have the first hour and then they would have the second hour. Do you think that would work in today's television environment, or do you think that that's too much of a hassle to really put up with? And then I just wanted to say I really appreciate your reporting. I'm actually a really big fan of this podcast because of your reporting. So thanks, and go VIP.
DC, really appreciate it. Appreciate you calling. Call again. Brandon, the idea of doing overtly where it's noticeable or overtly where it's advertised are two different things too. You know, like, you're in the kid-friendly hour. That can turn off a lot of people. But not having Riddle wear a 420 shirt, you know, in the first hour, but having it be later in the show could be prudent, but I'm not sure you want to do anything like official where it seems like, you know, WWE syndicated show or cable, well, I guess it was cable, on USA Network, you know, WWE Mania, I think it was, and it was like, hi, I'm Todd Pettengill, welcome kids, let's go to Doink the Clown. You know, like, you don't want to just make it like that. So, yeah, what's your take on what DC said?
Yeah, I think if you're going to do it, subtlety is the key. It makes me think of back in my radio days at my college station, actually. We were an alternative rock station, and we played a whole bunch of different types of alternative rock, and sometimes that dipped into heavier genres. But there were bands and specific songs by bands that, not because of language or anything like that, but just because it was heavier. Maybe there was some screaming. Maybe it was just the aggressiveness of the music itself. It was labeled as, you know, pre and post, meaning essentially if you're going to play it, it's got to be pre-morning drive or it's got to be post-nighttime drive. So maybe you play it after 6 o'clock at night and you don't play it after 8 a.m. in the morning, something like that. I think that would be the direction that you'd want to go if you were going to do it. And I say that because, like, we didn't advertise that's what we did. We're not saying, you know, like, oh, here's this track by such and such heavy band that you can only hear after 7 o'clock at night. Like, no, you don't include it in your playlist in during the day. You include it in the night and early morning hours. So I think that if you were going to do it, that's kind of how you approach it. It's just something that you strategically book the show to put the more kid-friendly acts in your first hour, or at the very least, you don't include not even necessarily having to have kid-friendly acts, but having your acts that you feature in the first hour not do anything particularly risque one way or the other. I think that can work, but I also think it's important to acknowledge that WWE has been TVPG for years and years now, and they have very rarely approached the line of TV-14, and that's a conscious decision. I mean, there is more that WWE could do and more that they could allow their wrestlers to say while still keeping the TVPG rating. It's just been a conscious choice to not go there. So, I mean, they can push the envelope if they want to push the envelope and still keep their rating intact.
Yeah. All right. Up next, 484. Thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Matt from Wilmington, Delaware. How you guys doing?
Hey, Matt. Doing good. Thanks for calling up. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, first of all, I wanted to clear something up. You can buy those 420 shirts at the merchandise stands. I was at the house show last night, and they had them for sale.
Wow. At the house shows, no less. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was at the house show in Atlantic City last night. One of the things I wanted to mention about that was that they had a tag match, Ronda Rousey's tagging with Shayna Baszler. And by the way, Rousey was working heel, but she got by far the biggest reaction out of anybody, bigger than Bianca Belair or anybody else. But with that being said, with those two tagging together, do you see them tagging together on television possibly, you know, after maybe this tournament's over, them going into maybe they could be tag champs because they certainly would be good partners. I've been waiting forever for them to put those two together. And then the other thing that a lot of guys have been stealing my thunder with their phone calls because I was going to ask the same question about, you know, back in the Attitude Era when we had the War Zone later at night and it was a little bit more, a little bit more adult-oriented. Just with the three-hour show, I feel like having that kind of change in the way that if you do it subtly, I feel like it would just, if you ramp it up later in the night, it would and get it more intense. It would just make it the 3 hours sort of easier, more palatable, I guess. I don't know how they would do that. And then the other thing, we have 24/7 belt being carried around by Dana Brooke. Is there a possibility that could ever become a women's mid-card belt instead of just a belt she's carrying around? And then my last point here is Lashley and AJ Styles, two of my favorite guys, both baby faces. It's hard to get behind a match with two baby faces facing each other. As much as Lashley's a powerhouse in there, and I love seeing him, and AJ's work rate is amazing. You know, I noticed the crowd, they had them chanting back and forth, you know, Bobby, Bobby, AJ, AJ. And I looked at the crowd and I didn't see them doing anything. And I don't know if that was them putting in noise or what, but just from my perspective, it was hard for me to get into that match because I like both guys so much. And psychologically, it's hard for me to wrap my head around two baby faces fighting each other. Although I understand that it was for the U.S. title and they did do a good job with the package before that. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just wanted to let you know about the 420 shirt and just the possibility of the 24/7 maybe being a women's mid-card title and then, you know, the psychology of two baby faces against each other.
Brandon, I'll let you take that first.
Yeah, I wanted to first touch on you mentioned about Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler tagging. I would really like to see that translate onto TV, but I think it's almost entirely predicated on what Ronda's schedule looks like, because, you know, they've been using her primarily in title feuds and in major main event programs. So it would have to be a situation where Rousey was going to be hanging around for a while and was able to kind of do a side program maybe for the women's tag titles. But if she is going to be around and they can use her, you know, on a weekly basis, I would love the team of Rousey and Baszler, not only because it would instantly elevate those women's tag titles and bring some real credibility and legitimacy to them, but because I think Baszler is so good that she'd bring out something in Rousey, and she may have already. I mean, I saw clips of that match you were speaking of that you were in attendance for, and it looked like Rousey was having a heck of a time. It seemed like she was really, really enjoying herself. So, that is something that I really, really would like to see. As far as some of the other stuff, the 24/7 title, I don't think that you want to kick off a legacy of a new women's title with it having sort of the baggage of the 24/7 championship, just because that title it is such a joke, and I don't think that anybody takes it seriously except maybe Dana Brooke. So I think that if you were going to set up a mid-card women's title, it's something that you would want to start with fresh. And I'm not a huge advocate for adding a women's title, only because I think that they've had trouble having meaningful secondary women's storylines in the past most of the time. I think you've seen it with the women's tag team titles often falling by the wayside. But with that being said, the caveat, of course, is that we are, you know, under new management. So that could change. I think that if Triple H's show proves itself and sustains itself long term as being able to promote multiple women's feuds at the same time, then that's something that maybe they can consider and look at down the road. And as for the other point about Styles and Bobby Lashley, definitely see where that could be a turnoff. Typically, I am definitely in the camp of trying to match baby faces against heels and not really being a big fan of the baby face versus baby face match. But I do think that you can get away with it for a TV match where, you know, this wasn't meant to be a major feud. This was meant to be a situation where Styles has defeated The Miz a couple of times. He's you know, been on a bit of a winning streak as of late. It makes sense that he would earn an opportunity at the U.S. title. And so we have the match against Bobby Lashley, who happens to be, you know, the champion and also a babyface, and you move on. So I was okay with it in this context, but generally speaking, I do agree that, you know, you do typically want two wrestlers facing off who are on opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think the 24/7 title is too damaged to make a secondary title, and I think if they have one women's title, if they happen to merge the two women's titles and had one women's championship plus a tag team championship, that's enough. You know, I just, and you know, NXT as a brand, that's a place for another woman to be champion and have, you know, what be perceived as a secondary singles title. I think that's enough. I think every title you add has diminishing returns. It waters down the other belts. And there just has to be a really good reason to have it. And I think you can make a case for two men's world champions if you have a strong brand split. But you can also have a strong brand split and have a floating champion, although it depends on who that's. But anyway, we've covered that. If Baszler's having fun, I'm enjoying her a lot more because she wears her emotions for all to see. And her body language, her facial expressions, her enthusiasm for her job. I enjoy people who bring joy to their jobs. I don't care what your job is. I mean, if I want to be around people who are enjoying themselves in whatever they're doing, making the best of what the situation they're in, and also conveying it's a good fit for them. And nobody wants to pay to see someone who's, you know, no one wants to go to a concert and have, you know, the lead singer go, God, it's a fourth day straight of the tour. I don't know if my voice is going to hold. No one wants to hear that, even if it's true. Just like, we're here. We're not thinking about the other dates. We're not worried about your schedule. We paid money. We want to be here and enjoy ourselves. And you want wrestlers to come across that way too. So, you know, if that makes her happy, that's good.
I would
agree with.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Brandon. I'll throw it back to you, Matt, in a second.
Oh, I was just going to say that I had mentioned this on Twitter last week, but with Shayna Baszler in particular, one of the things I think is really key to presentation going forward. It's a small thing, but to me, a really important one. Someone like Shayna Baszler, who they're definitely making an effort to revitalize and rejuvenate, and I think so far it's been a successful attempt, but I think that it could be assisted even more by just going back to her old music. I mean, there are a lot of wrestlers on that roster who came out of NXT with really catchy and really unique music that fit them to a T down in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And they used them when they got to the main roster and then eventually transitioned them to these really generic songs that really don't stand out among each other at all. Shayna Baszler is one of the biggest examples of that, but I think of also like guys like Ricochet. I mean, a lot of these talents had great themes in NXT that really brought the character together, and they were just sort of dumbed down and turned into just generic characters for the sake of sort of making them all feel the same on the main roster. And if there was one little detail that I think could go a long way in helping revitalize these characters that Triple H is definitely working on, it would be that.
Yeah, Matt, thank you.
Yeah, I definitely agree about the music. When they give people these generic entrance music, it really takes away from their, you know, the impact of their entrance, and it's part of their character, it's part of their presentation. But yes, Baszler and Rousey were having a great time. They just destroyed Raquel and Aaliyah last night, and it was really fun to watch. The match ended with both of them locking in their signature submissions and tapping out basically both opponents at the same time. But yeah, I just feel like the shows have been good under Triple H. The one thing that I think that there's been absent is a little bit of like the Let Me Up segments that you know, Vince probably got a little bit too happy with. But mm-hmm. I feel like the wrestling matches have been great. Like, you know, the 15-20 minute matches, they've been awesome. The work rate's been great. You know, I love seeing these guys having, you know, these awesome matches with the dramatic near falls, and they're almost always the psychology working towards their finish. They almost always end with their finisher. Just thinking back to SmackDown, the main event with Gunther and Nakamura, you know, Nakamura worked on Gunther's arm, so he couldn't get him in the powerbomb. And he struggled to get him in the powerbomb and eventually hit the powerbomb, finished him off with that. So, but at the same time, I feel like sometimes you need, you know, a little bit of a Let Me Up segment that, you know, you can take a breath and it's not so intense. And that hasn't been there with Triple H. But then again, he's only been around for less than a month. So maybe, you know, he's still getting his footing with that thing. And, you know, he's got a lot of work to do. So that's basically all I got for you guys.
You feeling good about this Levesque product so far overall, Matt?
Yeah, I am overall, because I do think that the wrestling is way better, and it's being featured better. The characters are, you can take them more seriously. You know, I just think that there are some things that can be implemented to sort of, I think somebody called earlier about, like, it just feels like very serious the whole time, and there's not much of anything that's sort of comedic or anything. And I'm not sitting here begging for comedy segments like the 24/7 nonsense where 18 people get rolled up and it all finishes with the same person walking out with the title. And I don't even, mm-hmm. And I agree with your guys' assessment on the 24/7 title. I think it's damaged and it really should just be burned or something like that. But at the same time, I was just thinking, what could you do to, to make that title actually mean something else, but there's probably nothing you can do.
Hey, Matt, before we go, is there anything you can share about the house show last night that was noteworthy other than what you've already brought up?
Rollins took on Ziggler. Ziggler called him out. Rollins came out. Rollins actually taunted the ref, and to the point where the ref chased him around the ring like he was going to beat him up. And then after the match, Rollins ended up defeating Ziggler. He went to exit the ring as if he was going to then he got back in the ring like he was going to stomp him again. And then Riddle ran in and beat him down a little bit. But then Rollins dropped him with one blow to the neck. So he was still selling the stinger. And then Rollins went to stomp Riddle, but Ziggler super kicked him. So it was sort of a surprise there. And then at the end, McIntyre has been pulled from the house show. So it was the Usos and Sheamus versus the Street Profits and Madcap Moss rather than the Street Profits and McIntyre. And they ended with the DQ because Sheamus hit somebody with a shillelagh, but Montez Ford got on the microphone and they turned it into a street fight and the Profits ended up going over. It was actually a pretty cool finish because everybody sort of got in there and hit their finishes on everybody. And then, you know, got thrown out of the ring, and then Montez Ford hit a big frog splash and finished off Sheamus. But yeah, Ronda Rousey's getting huge reactions, like, regardless of however they're trying to prevent it. People just went nuts.
Matt, if you don't mind, and it's not too inconvenient to send just kind of a list of, if you remember, the list of the results, we can publish it on the website, too, so we have a record of it. And I should just let people know, you're encouraged to do that. WeightKillerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you attend a live event, non-TV event, send us the results. And if you attend a TV event and keep track of the matches that are on before and after the taping, that's helpful for us, too, if you send those in. Not everybody who attends can call into the show and you know, talk to us about their in-person experience. But I don't say enough that, you know, we're, besides putting on podcasts, we also publish our website, and it's nice to have a record of firsthand reports from people who attend these, who either listen to our shows or read our website. So, Matt, that's good detail, and consider yourself invited to send in the results, too, and as much detail as you want. You've done a good job here.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. I actually tried to do that for one of the SmackDowns I went to, and I think I sent it to the wrong email address. But I'll be at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view and a Raw coming up, so maybe I can be an on-site correspondent.
Yeah.
I'll email you.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Drop us a line.
But,
yep.
Yeah, definitely. But other than that, you guys are the best in the business, and go VIP. All right.
Thank you so
Have
much.
A good night,
good
to
hear from you, Matt. Call again. Yep. Stand
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll wrap up with just one email here that I've had flagged from Zach. In Texas, he said, from the positive changes Hunter's instituted, like women getting a little more TLC, the increased match quality, and Drew McIntyre uttering the word wrestling, there are head-scratching issues with Raw that could easily be fixed, like just putting Drew McIntyre over KO instead of another lame DQ. Atop that list is the fact that AJ and Bobby Lashley didn't even main event. They built the match up all night. They had a video package, and then at the top of the third hour, while freaking Theory is technically main eventing, that would have been like if Mox versus Jericho had been at the top of the second hour of Dynamite and the show closed with Starks versus Solo. It doesn't make any sense from a formatting perspective, and it's a Vince thing. I figured Hunter would fix that, but nope. So, as often is the case, Zach, you get me to look at things differently, and I think you express yourself well, but I often disagree. And I do here. I like the third hour, they lose people for all kinds of reasons. And if you close the show out with a main event and the bell rings 42 minutes into the third hour, you know how long that match is going to go. It's going to go 15 minutes, maybe 16. And people are, they're going to have a smaller audience by that point than you do at the top of the third hour. So from a viewership, and this has to bear out over looking at minute by minutes and ratings trends. And you know, I plan to do that. and look at this. But I think if you say Arthur Dower is going to start with our main event, you have people who now are not committing to a one-hour show or a movie or a stand-up special on Netflix or something in the news. They're sticking with Raw because this match that you promoted for 2 hours, right at the point you're testing their patience, you're doing formal ring introductions. You've built this up as a big deal, but you're not making them wait 2 hours and 40 minutes to see it. They only have to wait 2 hours, and then they get to see it. Even if they stop watching 20 minutes later, you still have gotten more viewership in the third hour than you would by saving it for the main event. And it's completely open-ended when it's going to end, which I like, because now I can actually pop for near falls at the 12-minute mark instead of knowing, oh, we got an 18-minute window. They're going to go another 4 or 5 minutes. So I like it. I don't see a downside. And no, Theory against Ziggler is not Starks and Solo. You know, you can – I don't know where that's coming from. I'm not saying it's like a big match, but Starks and Solo was a couple levels below that. I'm a Ricky Starks fan, but that was a throwaway match with a rushed buildup during ring introductions. And Theory and Ziggler, they actually set it up early in the show. There's a logical backstory with the Money in the Bank situations that they both have and how they came about getting the briefcase differently. They're at completely different points in their careers. One guy's, you know, I don't know what Ziggler, 40-ish now, and in theories, you know, in his mid-20s, early 20s. So they told that story. Theory is like it or not, a main event wrestler in WWE. Is he a top guy? No. Do people whose opinions I respect in WWE think he has the work ethic and the ring smarts and the natural charisma and natural athleticism and overall look, and he's saying the right things and doing the right things and think he's on a trajectory towards that? Absolutely, people do. And so putting him in the final match on Raw after he's been gone for a while is also cashing in a little bit on what it means to be the final match, because you're not going to put Cedric Alexander in a final match on Raw. You're just not, especially the winning side. But you're going to put former world champ Dolph Ziggler in a main event or the last match on the show on occasion against the right opponent. And Theory has been in the mix, on the top mix for a while. And he went out there and he delivered a good match. They're trying to send a message. This guy was gone for a while, and now he's going to go out there and have a really good match. But we also understand Lashley Styles is a bigger deal, and we think ratings strategy, there's the better rating strategy is to put that on at the top of the third hour. And then you have the benefit of not knowing when the finish is going to happen or not happen. So that's my defense for it, Brandon. Well, what was your thought, and what do you think of what Zach had to say and what I had to say?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I would just add that you also can make the case that, well, I mean, I would go as far as to say that it is just a simple fact that Ziggler and Theory had the most build of anything on the show. I mean, this has been a feud that's been building since before Triple H took over. I mean, this is an angle that started with Vince McMahon before Theory even won Money in the Bank. So, yeah, I mean, this was... I don't know if it's meant to be the blow off to the feud, but they had yet to lock up in a one-on-one match, and they had been building to this for many, many weeks. So, yeah, I thought it made sense. I think that what you pointed out is certainly correct about the U.S. title match. And then I thought that putting this in the main event slot worked for what it was given the build that it had.
Yeah. So, what about, Owen, Kevin Owens losing clean. I would say a more protected, longer term under the auspices of Paul Levesque, you have KO lose clean. I think this is one of those situations where in 6 months, maybe Levesque has KO lose clean. But you don't want to define down someone who's been defined down, who just cut a fiery promo and is kind of trying to establish, I'm back, take me seriously, and then have him lose clean. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's why I said earlier on in the show that it's one of the few instances where I'm okay with a DQ finish. And typically I'm pretty strongly opposed to them when it involves a multi-segment match because it feels like you're getting invested in something that doesn't have a payoff. But sometimes there just aren't better options outside of not booking the match. And in this case, I thought that it worked because you have Drew McIntyre embroiled in this feud with the Bloodline. So by extension, you know, Roman Reigns, by extension, the Usos. The Usos have been getting in McIntyre's business on a regular basis. Meanwhile, Kevin Owens, like you said, is being reestablished and sort of reframed as a legitimate threat in the main event scene. And he gives his big statement of purpose about coming after titles. Well, if he just cleanly loses in the middle of the ring to the number one contender for the Undisputed Universal title, that pretty much ends that journey for the time being for Kevin Owens being taken as a legitimate challenger for that title. So by going this route, and by having Kevin Owens land the stunner on McIntyre after the match was over, you're sending the message that, hey, if Drew McIntyre does, in fact, beat Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle, then Kevin Owens can be viewed as a legitimate challenger for him going forward because they have unfinished business. They went toe-to-toe and had a competitive back-and-forth match, and we didn't have a winner. So maybe Kevin Owens would have beaten Drew McIntyre. So I think it sends the right message. It sets them both up for what happens after Clash at the Castle. And yeah, when you're working with a character who has been so seriously defined down for so long, when you're trying to revitalize that character and make him relevant again, the last thing you want to do is in the very first match after his big statement of purpose, have him just lose cleanly, even if it is to a character as important as Drew.
Anything else stand out on the show that you want to bring up, Brandon?
Yeah, we didn't touch on the Judgment Day promo at all, which
yep.
I'm a little surprised about.
If you didn't bring it up, I had that queued up next
yeah.
to throw to you before we wrapped up. So we're on the
yeah,
same page.
And the reason I mention it is because I am someone who has been very, very low on Judgment Day. I did not like the iteration with Edge at all. I don't think I was in the minority there. But I've sensed that there's been a little bit more positivity toward this incarnation with Finn Balor at the helm. And up to this point, I have not agreed. I've thought it has largely been as bad as the Edge iteration. Maybe you're doing less damage because, of course, these characters don't quite have the agency or the legacy that Edge has. But still, I thought it was a net negative for Finn Balor. I didn't think that it was doing any favors for Damian Priest or for Rhea Ripley. And tonight, they brought me around a little bit. I thought this was the strongest segment that they've had as a group overall to date. I think still, I don't necessarily feel like Finn Balor is better off in this group. But I thought Damian Priest cut a nice promo. I thought he laid out the groundwork really nicely for the match next week with Edge. And I think that that's a great move, by the way, because it not only gives you a big sort of main event to look forward to next week, but it's you're not giving away the Balor match quite yet, but you are giving the Toronto crowd a big deal by giving Edge, you know, giving them Edge in his hometown in his first televised match in a very, very long time. So that's been a strong positive that I thought they've been building toward for the last couple of weeks. And then for Rhea Ripley, I still think that she's missing something by being in this group, that I think there's more to Rhea Ripley than Judgment Day. But what I will say, and what I think she has successfully turned the tide on in the last couple of weeks, is that she is standing apart from the rest of the women's roster, aside from the women directly involved in the title picture. And that has been really, really hard to do for anyone who's not challenging for the title. So while I don't think that the group and the gimmick that she's necessarily portraying in Judgment Day is a great thing overall, I do think it's good that she has her own space in which to operate, because it is making her stand out and seem a little bit more important than random female wrestler who is, you know, thrust into this tag team tournament in teams that had not existed, you know, prior to a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was a good week for Judgment Day. I Balor is more interesting as a heel. Priest is still a work in progress, so I don't think he'll ever be a top-level promo, but I think they found a spot for him in a threesome where there's not too much weight on his shoulders. And I like Ripley, and I think all three of them sort of needed people to play off of, and I think you don't want them to. I don't think any of them you want standing in the ring alone right now. So even if it's not every week perfect and it's a work in progress, I like them together more than separate. And I think this week was the peak example of that so far for the faction. Trying to think, there's something else as you were talking, I was gonna bring up. I had a good feeling coming out of that, and I'm still intrigued with where they're headed with Dominic. I mean, I generally am. I'm curious what they, you know, what they end up doing with that. One thing I want to bring up on the Drew KO segment is, do you think that either of them went too far? And if they did, it's still worth it because that was not a word for word scripted segment. I know that much. So do you think that, like Kevin Owens saying that big, loud, almost comical tough guy voice is cutting a little too close for Drew, because that now fans might think when they hear him, oh, when he has this big, loud, deep voice, it's almost comical? Like, to me, Damian Priest has an almost comical tough guy voice. Let me tell you something. Drew's just a guy who talks like that. Those are his natural pipes. So it felt like if you're Kevin Owens, you're a heel, you're going to take shots. That's one thing. But my eyebrows went up a little bit when I heard that. I didn't think it was a big deal to say sometimes you wear a kilt, sometimes you have a sword. I think that's just acknowledging the elephant in the room about the sword. And obviously Drew's self-aware, or WWE is, because he's not bringing it out the last couple of weeks. And the kilt is just something you sometimes wear, you sometimes don't. That, I think people accept that that's just like sometimes you wear sweatpants, sometimes you wear jeans. It's just like that's part of his wardrobe. But then, you know, Drew came back hard at KO2, and I think that's what you ultimately remembered. And, you know, that line, I don't care if you're a prize fighter or a sports entertainer or a superstar, we're wrestlers in a wrestling ring, so let's freaking wrestle. I just think you win the promo when you end with that. And then, you know, so there was a lot going on there, but was there any point where you're listening going, boy, that almost feels counterproductive? And even, but then again, even if you think that, is that ultimately a price worth paying?
Yeah, it never reached that point for me. And I think the reason is because I'm looking at this Drew McIntyre and this Kevin Owens as reboots of their character. I mean, they're still who they are and who they've been, and that their history matters, but they are, again, you know, a phrase I've used a lot tonight, they're under new management and things are different for both of them. And so I thought it was important for both of them not only to make a statement of purpose, but also to acknowledge who they were and almost get it out of their systems that, hey, this is not who we're going to be anymore. So if it had been – if we were still in the Vince McMahon era and KO is saying these things and kind of tearing Drew down, and Drew's going to come out the next week as the same character, being the same person, then yeah, I think that that starts to become problematic. But I think that the nuances in their characters are different enough and strong enough now that you can openly talk about sort of the less respected aspects of the character presentation and get away with it. And I also think that this early on in this new era, that it is important to allow the wrestlers to cut promos that very clearly don't feel scripted, because I think sending that message is important. And I think as time goes on, they'll probably settle into more of a cadence where you don't get quite so many, you know, like ooh and ah moments, and that's fine. But in the beginning, I think having this ability to be natural and be off the cuff, even if it means, you know, maybe saying something that isn't the greatest for your character in the moment. I think it overall is you know, still something you want to do.
Yeah. Anything else from the show? Figure small.
No, I don't think so. I mean, we didn't touch on the women's tag tournament a whole lot, and I think that's not to be totally unexpected, because it has felt a little underwhelming just because the teams are not actual established teams.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Overall, I'm never going to complain about significant attention on the women's division outside of the main championship focus. I think what Bayley's been doing with Dakota Kai and with Io Sky has been really, really good so far. I think that if they keep those two characters strong, those are two staples for the women's division going forward. And you kind of, that's one of those head scratchers where, you know, you kind of look at what Dakota and Io have brought to the table so far in their very short time on the main roster. And you think like, man, how did Vince not get it? You know, like, how did he not see that these could be legitimate players? So, yeah, I mean, just a lot of little stuff that we didn't get to touch on that are just overall big positives.
Yeah. All right, cool. Brandon, thank you. How can people follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter, and I will be, of course, covering two pay-per-views. It's a very busy weekend here coming up in a couple of weeks for the Torch, and for me specifically, we'll have Clash at the Castle at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a Saturday afternoon pay-per-view, then the night after, we've got AEW All Out. So I will be very, very busy for sure.
On a holiday weekend.
Yeah, on a holiday weekend, and then it's actually. That is always, on a personal note, my favorite week of the year, just because so my birthday is that week, and the NFL kickoff pretty much always falls on either right on my birthday or within a day or two. So it's always a cool little thing that I get to look forward to as a big football fan. It's like the ultimate birthday gift to me every year, like the NFL's here.
Well, it is going to be an experience for you, covering two shows on the same weekend. So by Sunday night, we'll see how you're feeling.
Has it happened before, or was it? No, it was just it was 2 weeks back to back with what was it? Money in the Bank and Forbidden Door back to back. But yeah, this will be the first true back to back.
Cool. Brandon, thanks. Always a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks to our listeners. And we'll talk to you all next time.